Hi, thanks for downloading another edition of SoxCast. This is Jason Tuohy of Boston.com, and I just talked to Gordon Eads, who's in Atlanta covering the team. Gordon filled us in on the situation with Curt Schilling's shoulder, and he gave us a little preview of the upcoming West Coast swing against San Diego and Seattle.
So, Gordon, Schilling flew back to Boston for an MRI on Tuesday. It appears that there's nothing drastically wrong with the shoulder, but what does this mean to the team, and what's going on with him?
Well, Schilling had a cortisone shot in addition to an MRI. The MRI came back normal. It was clear, which was good news for the Red Sox. The cortisone shot suggests that there was some inflammation in the shoulder, and it's going to take 2 or 3 days just to calm down from that. Terry Francona said they're going to reevaluate Friday, but I'd say that chances of Schilling making his next start, which is scheduled for Sunday in San Diego, are probably remote at this point. With the team having an off day Thursday, Terry Francona would have the option of juggling his rotation a little bit. Beckett could go on Sunday on regular rest if he chose to do so, but a little bit of it's guesswork at this point. We'll have to see what they, how they proceed from here. But, Schilling has talked all season about his maddening inconsistency. And frankly, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that when you're 40 years old, you just can't summon some of the pitches you were able to throw in the past. And there's an awful lot of mileage on Schilling's shoulder. And it could also be a cumulative thing, you just wonder if the rest of his body is feeling some aches and pains that are impacting on the shoulder too. I mean, pitching is not just about your arm. I mean, you think about your drive up through your legs and your hips and your torso, your oblique, all the way up to your shoulder. And as Francona said yesterday, Schill's not going to be feeling 18 years old anymore. That one's a given.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you did note also in the article you wrote about it, and he has been maddeningly inconsistent. Is this the type of thing where you're thinking he might just need more rest in between starts? I mean, they might have to baby him a little more.
Well, no, I don't think you can. That's on the table because, frankly, Schilling, he's made 15 starts, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Seven of them have come on regular rest, which would be 4 days rest between starts. An additional seven have come with 5 days rest. I mean, so he's gotten an extra day's rest on nearly half of his starts. So you can't give a starting pitcher in the rotation much more time than he's already gotten. So that's not an option. I mean, one option that may be on the table is to shut him down indefinitely, put him on the disabled list, give him a couple of weeks off to recover, like say they did with Timlin last year, and see how he responds to that. I'd say that is one thing that is certainly a consideration.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now assuming Schilling misses his next start, and with the potential of him missing more starts after that, how would Francona handle that with the rotation? Do you think he would bring Snyder in to pitch?
Well, that's where it's going to become a question of whether it's one start or whether they place him on the disabled list. If it's only one start, yeah, then his option is to maybe have what we call a bullpen game. Although, again, because of that day's rest, they have the luxury of skipping this turn in the rotation, and then you're only worried about who pitches when it's his turn to take the ball in when the team comes home after Seattle. So they've got a lot of time to play with here. But if it ends up that he misses a second start, then the logical thing to do is to put him on the disabled list, and you could reach down to Pawtucket and call up a John Lester. You could call up a David Pauly. I suppose Snyder's an option, but he hasn't been stretched out at all, so that's probably one of the more unlikely options.
So now the Sox are in Atlanta now. They're flying out west to face the Padres and the Mariners in what is the longer longest road trip of the year, right?
I believe that is correct. Yeah. Certainly mileage-wise, Jason, it is. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Now, this is at kind of a precarious time for the team, too. They still obviously have a big lead in the division, but the Yankees are so hot right now. And, you know, a long road trip like this, you're away from home, you're facing teams you haven't seen that much. You know, if you go out and have a really bad record on this road trip, that could make things dangerous in the AL East, no?
Well, you know, I would think when you have a 9-game lead in the division, you might want to be hesitant, Jason, to use the word precarious. I mean, that's still a pretty comfortable cushion, you know, unless they want to go out, excuse me, and lose the remaining 7 games of this trip while the Yankees reel off 7 in a row, and there's no reason to suggest that that's going to happen with the Red Sox. That said, this trip poses challenges for a number of reasons. You know, first and foremost, of course, is that the first two stops, Atlanta and San Diego, are playing National League teams in National League ballparks, which means not using your DH. And you build your roster one way, and that's, you know, assuming you're going to be able to use a DH, and then for a stretch of 6 games in the middle of the season, you can't. And that's problematic for the Red Sox. Monday, they had to sit David Ortiz, or I should say that Francona chose to sit Ortiz because, you know, Euclid, Lowell, or Ortiz is going to sit one of each of the 3 games as he tries to rotate guys, and they get smoked. Ortiz plays first base yesterday, hits a home run. You know, Atlanta, they're facing a kid, Buddy Carlisle, today, which doesn't exactly strike fear into anyone, but when they go to San Diego, they're going to face 3 guys, Chris Young, Greg Maddux, and Jake Peavy, who are pitching extremely well. You know, Peavy has the best earned run average in the National League and has struck out over 100 guys. Greg Maddux has won, what, 330-plus and still cruising, and Chris Young is 6'10" and very tough to hit. And by the way, in case you missed it this morning, Jason, Young announced that he is appealing his 5-game suspension for his brawl with Derek Lee, which means he would be eligible to make his start Friday, because I doubt very much that the appeal will be heard before then. So the Red Sox aren't catching a break there. And then they go up to Seattle, and you know, you look at the breakdown of Seattle on paper, and you wonder how they're playing as well as they are. I mean, beyond Ichiro and Jojima, they're not exactly tearing it up offensively. I mean, Richie Sexton is double figures in home runs, but he's also hitting around the Mendoza line. You know, the pitching, Felix Hernandez, who pitched spectacularly against the Red Sox in Boston, he's had arm problems since then and has been inconsistent. And yet, you know, the Mariners are playing pretty good ball. They're over 500, and you know, Jared Washburn has pitched pretty well, and you know, that's going to be a tough way to end a trip. Mm-hmm. But you know, the difference. The one thing you have to keep in mind, Jason, is the previous trip to the West Coast, the one where they went to play Oakland and Arizona, that came without the benefit of any time off. They played a tough Sunday night game, a 4-hour game against the Yankees, had to go straight to the airport, flew all night to Oakland, played that night. That sets a team back. This trip is a little more civilized. You know, they played a day game Sunday. They flew out to Atlanta that night, got here, you know, probably a late dinner hour, got a full night's sleep, played the next day against Atlanta. They have a day off to travel to San Diego on Thursday. So then the trip up from San Diego to Seattle is certainly doable. So, I mean, this isn't anything out of the ordinary. For them, and it's much more civil. The last trip just sucks the life out of you.
Right, and you could really see the team was getting tired in that Oakland series.
No
with
doubt.
Good reason. Yeah.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even though this trip is going to be more civilized, as you put it, you know, they're going to be on the road for more than a week. I've always wondered how this affects a team. I mean, a lot of them are away from their families for, you know, more than a week. They're together. You know, if you lose a game or two, do guys start getting on each other's nerves? Do they get sick of eating out every night? I mean, are these the little things that, you know, the normal fan doesn't think of?
Yeah, well, you know, the guys who don't want to go out to eat, you know, they have the option of room service, Jason, or you know, they get great spreads in the clubhouse. These guys eat very well. I mean, I'm not even sure now what the per diem is up to. It's over $70 a night.
Wow.
And you can do okay on $70. And the funny thing is, Jason, is there are plenty of guys who pocket their per diem and just eat at the ballpark because they get, you know, food catered in generally, and it's generally pretty good. Not that the writers, I don't want you to get the impression, Jason, that the writers are able to chow down with the players. That doesn't happen. But, you know, sure, guys, you know, let's face it. I mean, given their druthers, guys would rather be home. But they certainly understand that this is part of the equation, and they get accustomed to it. And, I mean, the Red Sox are doing something to, I guess, reward their employees in one way and maybe to make this trip more livable in another, and that's all full-time front office employees are going to be flown out to San Diego by John Henry for the weekend.
Wow.
Now, I'm not certain whether family members are coming out or not, but presumably you know, shoot, if I was a ball player and I'm looking at the schedule, I'd say San Diego, Seattle might be a couple of places my family would enjoy being at. So I wouldn't be surprised if some players have family members coming along with them. You know, the guys who like to golf and certainly that's usually a pitcher's prerogative. You know, that's the beauty about being a starting pitcher, Chase. You only work once every 5 days. Get to golf on those off days and all. They'll be hitting the links out in San Diego and Seattle too. So, but sure. I mean, it's still. I'm having some fun with this and all. But obviously, you know, you're going to a different time zone and everything. Your body clock has to adjust to that difference and all. And the flying wears you down. I mean, there's no such thing as a short trip anymore, although these guys don't have to deal with some of the security hassles their fans have to deal with when they fly around the country following them. But, you know, I think they're feeling pretty good about themselves. They survived the Oakland-Arizona test. They came home and had a big weekend against the Giants, and they've handled Atlanta pretty well. The shocking thing to me in playing the Braves, Jason, is the performance of Andruw Jones, Atlanta's all-star center fielder, a guy who's in his contract year, and he's barely hitting over 200. In 5 games against the Red Sox, he's hitless in 17 at-bats, and he's got an 0-for-18 going overall right now. That to me is shocking.
Yeah, and, you know, because the Braves are on TV so much, I've actually watched them play a decent amount. And, you know, he just seems fooled by curveballs left and right. I mean, he's swinging at the first pitch all the time. He just looks like a different hitter from the guy who hit over 50 home runs a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's a mess right now. And you wonder if the contract situation is weighing on his mind. It's funny, different guys respond differently when they're in their contract year. I mean, Alex Rodriguez may be having the greatest salary drive in history right now. You know, a guy who he has the option of opting out of the last 3 years of his contract with the Yankees.
Right.
And here's Andruw Jones, a guy that, you know, before the season started, there was talk that, hey, you know, is he going to be a $20 million guy this winter? And he's just having a dreadful season. And they're a different lineup, obviously, with him not hitting. Bobby Cox had dropped him to the six hole in the batting order, and this is a guy that usually the Jones boys would be hitting back to back, Chipper and Andruw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now another surprise coming out of Atlanta is the performance of Edgar Renteria. I mean, he is completely different from the guy we saw in Boston a couple of years ago.
Well, if you look at his career profile, there's 1 year that just doesn't seem to fit with the rest of it, with how he played in Florida, with how he played in St. Louis, and now with how he's playing in Atlanta. And that's the 1 year that Edgar had in Boston. And it's shocking. I mean, he was an all-star caliber player with the Marlins, all-star caliber player with Florida and St. Louis, and now he's an all-star caliber player again with Atlanta. And obviously, Boston was not a place that he was comfortable in, and he got off to the bad start, and particularly defensively. I mean, even now, you look at that 30 errors that he made in Boston, you say, "Now this can't possibly be the same guy." But he's a National League. He loves National League play. He loves the style of play there. He's obviously very comfortable there. And hey, you know, we can't say we weren't warned ahead of time. Tony La Russa, who was his manager in St. Louis, said, "Hey, look, you know, I don't think this guy is going to thrive there. I don't think he's going to like the pressure there and the attention there." And sure enough, that's the way things played out.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see, though, that he's, you know, having success somewhere else. Now back to the West Coast trip. I want to hear a little bit about how this affects you personally covering the team. I mean, I know just being out in California, it cuts about 3 hours off your deadline.
Jason, it gets real tricky for the paper when we go out west because of the deadline situations. And I mean, we're basically dead in the water when there's a night game on the West Coast, which will be the case for I believe 4 out of the 6 games, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. The first 2 in San Diego, and I believe the first 2 in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I believe that Wednesday game is a day game, but I'm not. I don't have my schedule here right in front of me, Jay. Sorry, but so you know, people, our readers, they may wonder, well, wait a second, where's the game story and all? And the way it works, our first edition goes to press. Our stories have to be filed somewhere in the vicinity of 10:15 at night. Well, if there's a West Coast game, that puts you in the first inning. So there's no game story in that first edition, which means we often write either a long notebook or what we call an early story, and we might profile a particular player. In Oakland, when we were in that situation, for example, I wrote a story about Dustin Pedroia because he grew up nearby outside of Sacramento, and I talked to his parents and that kind of thing. So we kind of give our readers something, give them a feature or something, but they don't have that game story. Mm-hmm. And then the majority of our readers get what we call our third edition, which goes to press. We have to file by, say, 12:15, 12:30. And again, if it's a quick game on the West Coast, you've got a chance to get that in there. But we had a very late game in Oakland one night. I'm not sure a game made any edition until our very final edition, which is the fourth edition. So when that happens, what I would recommend for people who have internet access is to go on Boston.com and look for our game stories there, because you'll get a fuller coverage of the game that way than you would in your paper. And I know a lot of people are dismayed when they get their paper and say, "Oh, wait a second, you know, didn't the Sox play last night and we don't have a score in there?" That's one of the frustrating parts of our business, to be sure.
Mm-hmm, definitely. You said you do, say, profiles or a longer notebook. Now, does that cause extra reporting for you? I mean,
sure. Yeah. You know, and you're you're scrambling to get it done. Mm-hmm. I mean, like in the Pedroia story, for example. You know, I had talked to Dustin before the ball game, but let's say on the East Coast, it was already say 7:30, 8 o'clock by the time I talked to him, mm-hmm. And then his folks came just before the game started. I'm grabbing them late. So it's almost 10 o'clock. So you're writing at frantic rate there, Jason. And for a hunt and peck guy like myself, that poses some interesting challenges. Although I am about the fastest 2-finger typist I've ever met. So
good to hear. Good luck then on the West Coast. I hope you don't have to do too much frantic reporting and filing. But it'll be good to have you back on the East Coast, too.
All right, Chase. Thanks very much, man.
All right, thanks. Take it easy.
Thanks for downloading SoxCast. For more Red Sox coverage and to read Gordon's latest article, go to www.boston.com/sports. If you want to see an audio slideshow of this podcast or send questions for the next podcast, visit www.boston.com/soxcast.